place I went to is in India on the southeast coast. And I drew a map up here. And you can see Bombay over here, New Delhi at the top, Madras at the bottom. And here's Calcutta. That's where Mother Teresa is. Mm-hmm. And here's Machilipatnam, which is where I was. And I flew into Madras, took the train during the night, took 10 hours to go by train, about 200 miles up to this small town. It's small in India, it's 100,000 people. It's small. And there's an orphanage there, and a pastor that started the orphanage. That's who I visited. The way this all started was very, very interesting. Oh, by the way, you can start the tape. Sorry about that. You can start the tape now. This is Brent Hampel, my faith journey in India. As I just explained, I went to Machilipatnam, South India, and I'm explaining now how it came about. Came through, actually my motivation, at first anyway, came in a very illogical way. Came through a dream I had one night. And that was my first kind of spark that got me going. And I'll go ahead and tell you the dream real quick because it's important, I think. I'm not a person that has big dreams like this at all, so this was very strange to me. But it got my attention. In this dream, I was inside this large barn, huge barn, you know, breaking down. And inside the barn were books, thousands and millions of books, kind of like a large library. And in there were people milling around, looking at the books, reading books. And I came out then of the barn, and it must have been all three stories high, just a huge structure. Very old and worn out. Just then a helicopter comes out of the sky with loudspeakers underneath it and a voice over the loudspeakers saying, repent, repent, the kingdom of God is at hand. And the helicopter lands on top of the barn, and the barn can't take the stress of the helicopter, so it starts falling apart and starts crumbling, and it's a mess. People are dying, and it's just a mess. The books are all over the place, and bodies. I'm in the dream, I'm standing there watching this, crying. And then an angel comes, takes my arm, and leads me up to this sort of a grassy area. And on this grassy area is a picnic table. And at the picnic table there is a man from London with a derby hat on and a suit and tie. And he's standing there by the bench, and so I go stand by him. The angel directs me there. And then we wait, waiting for something. What we're waiting for is Jesus. Jesus walks in. And I've never seen Jesus so crisp and so clear as in this dream. I haven't since. And it's this light emanating from Jesus. He comes in and stands to my right, so I'm in between the two of them, standing by his table. And then the man from London says a prayer, a grace prayer, and we sit down at the table to eat. And on our plates is some beef, some meat. And the man from London starts eating, and I don't, I'm just very afraid. I'm just kind of sitting there in the dream, very quiet. And Jesus reaches over to my plate, cuts off a piece of the meat, and brings it up to my mouth. And then I wake up. Oh, I forgot one important thing. And that is, when the London man from London was eating his meat, he said, "This tastes like something I once ate in India." Okay, so, and there's a lot of connotations there, because Hindus don't eat beef. And there's all sorts of things. But I woke up crying, and it was just such a powerful dream, and wondering whether I was going to eat the meat or not. I knew right when I woke up that I was feeling that God wanted me to go to India for some reason or other. I didn't know why. And that was in 81. I didn't actually go to India till 5 years later. So I was a pretty reluctant type of person. you know, not to, to put off every reason in the world about this dream. It's just a dream, you know. I can't go to India. Where would I go? What do I do? So, but what happened was, in my home church in Eugene, Oregon, Central Lutheran Church, there was a woman there that had been corresponding with the pastor in Machili Putnam, the pastor I visited. His name is Pastor Babu. And she and them wrote back and forth for about 10 years. And she would send a check once in a while to help his ministry, which I'll explain in a second. And he came to Eugene while I was in school in Tacoma at PLU. And he spoke at the church. Some of the people really liked him, so they donated some money and they met him and so forth, and he left. And I read about it and just clicked. It just clicked in my head, why don't I see if I can go visit this pastor in India? So I did. I went up to Marietta, the lady's name, and said, I want to go to India. She was shocked. The reason she was shocked was because they had been praying that someone from the congregation could go to India. And they had two people in mind, but myself and an elderly man that lived next door to them. But they felt he was not healthy enough to go, and they felt that I was too busy with my school studies to want to go. So they just prayed about this and prayed about this and never told anybody until I went up and asked them. So it was really wonderful the way everything started that way. And from then on, it just rolled. It just, everything fell into place. Everything was just very easy. It really was. Basically, the funds for me to go came from my congregation there, and my parents helped out a little bit as well. And I went to India then for 6 weeks, lived there as a guest, and came back and then shared slides, the ones you'll see, at different churches that were interested, and found sponsors for children and so forth. And just kind of generally enjoyed the whole experience. It was really wonderful. And of course, the repercussions of all this, you'll see in the slides as well, the results that happened because of all this. Any questions so far? If you have any questions, feel free to ask.
Did you finish school before you went there?
Yes. I graduated in December of 86, and the next month, January, I went to India. So it was one right after the other. Yeah. I got my bachelor's in psychology from PLU. Anyway. I'll go ahead and start. Could someone hit the lights and I'll hit the projector?
Get this rolling. These are slides I took myself, except for the very last few that were sent to me by the pastor. But almost all these are ones I took when I went to India in 87. And I'm hoping to get new ones and then we'll go this coming July. Of course.
If you have questions, feel free to ask.
Okay.
This is the family of the pastor. That's the pastor on the far right, Pastor Babu, his wife and his five children. Pastor Babu was raised in the city of Machili Putnam himself, and his parents could not afford to feed him, so they brought him to an orphanage run by an American and a Finnish couple. And they were connected, I think, with Assemblies of God, but I wasn't really sure. Denominations are really kind of vague in India, Christian denominations, of course,
Is he of a specific denomination?
No, he's not.
Oh.
He's totally an independent Christian community that I was at. And this seems to be the way a lot of them are,
mm-hmm.
At least the ones that are growing very quickly, in the rural areas, especially like in this city. The larger cities, of course, you'll have your Catholics, even Lutherans. There is the Evangelical Lutheran Church, under Evangelical Lutheran Church, and United Lutheran Church in India. But the closest Lutheran church I was able to find close to this city was about 100 miles away. He almost died when he was a teenager, and he still wasn't Christian at that time. He had pray to all the Hindu gods and so forth. But it was a preacher that came in and prayed with him, a Christian preacher that came in and prayed with him, that really changed his heart. And then he was baptized and became Christian. In India, have you either been to India or know much about it at all?
No, only we had a friend who was pastor, missionary.
Okay.
From Missouri Synod.
Okay.
In the Connie or Yambadi or.
Do you know where he was?
Something like Connie Yambadi or.
Okay, I'm not sure.
Maybe a different country now.
Yeah, okay.
Long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. They're the hard names to remember too. Kind of strange. But, what was I going to say? In India, the culture, of course, is very different than here. And you basically belong to a religion. There are not very many atheists in India. You're either Hindu, Christian, or whatever, and it seems to be very divided, usually, a lot of the time. And what religion you are, basically, is a direct reflection of who you are, and vice versa. So it's a very, very important thing about what your religion is in India, as sometimes, I think, opposed in this country. Of course, there's lots of religious violence that happens in India because of that, between Sikhs and Hindus and so forth. So, Christians are about 3% of the population in India. About 80% is Hindu. The rest are Buddhist and Muslim and others. The pastor started the Orphans Faith Home in 1972. When he was walking home to his hut one evening, he saw two little boys begging food on the street, and he felt just moved in some way to bring them home. And he brought them home, and his wife couldn't believe it. She goes, "We don't have enough food for us. Why did you bring these two boys, street boys, in our home, our hut?" He just told them, I just felt the urge. I don't know, I can't explain it. And within an hour, a neighbor had come by and given them two more kilos of rice for no reason. It's just all these no reason things popping up, you know. I think in a way you can see the spirit moving. That was the start of it. And gradually, people in the community then started supporting him, donating rice, donating milk, donating clothes for the children. He started bringing in more and more children. When I went in 87, there were about 35 children there. And these are some of them. The boy with the blue tank top on says, "Oregon."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He is my boy. I sponsor him for $15 a month. And that was a shirt, actually, that my mother sent to her sponsor boy, but they have the same name, Srinu. And so there's a mix-up. Mm-hmm. And they thought, well, let's have him wear it just in case I sent it by accident or something, in case they got it mixed up. But, I should go back. He's holding a Eugene Lions Club flag, and it's the Lions Club. He was the president of his local Lions Club in that city, and it was the Lions Club that paid his way to go to America to visit the church where Marietta is at. Most of the area looks like this, very beautiful, very gorgeous, very tropical. Rice fields, palm trees, coconut trees. It's not the slums of Calcutta, like most people are probably have seen pictures of on TV. But I saw a real beautiful part of India. The Indian Ocean is just nearby, about 5 miles away. Lots of fishing boats on the ocean you can see. For some reason, there were dead sea turtles washed up on the beach. That was one right there in the right-hand corner. This was in January, and I went and touched the water, and it was lukewarm. So very nice, very spring weather, type weather. This is a typical road outside of the city. Lots of animals, lots of people, activities. That's a flock of geese, or no, gaggle of geese. Herd of water buffalo. Most people live in thatched huts like this. And when the floods come, which is almost every year, the cyclones come in, it's usually August or September, and all the huts are washed away, and they have to rebuild them each year. It's just sort of a process, a cycle they get into, rebuilding their huts every year after the floods. The yellow building is where the pastors and his family live, where other adults that work there live. That's where I stayed, any guests that come by. The white building is where the children live. It's made out of cement, so it doesn't wash away. When it does flood, they have to go to the roofs so they don't drown. Most of the people don't know how to swim, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
And so when floods, they're very afraid of the water, and a lot of them drown. Their cattle drown and so forth. So they have to go to the top of the roofs, and they live up there for like 10 days, for 2 weeks at a time. They just all go to the top. So, you know, 30 people living up there. 30 people on this roof over here, and they're having to cook and eat and everything else. This was a group photo taken on the last day I was there. Of course, you can see me probably very easily. a lot of the children had never seen a white person before, especially a white person with blonde hair and blue eyes. So when they first saw me, they ran. They were really afraid of me. It was kind of funny. But after about 2 weeks, you know, I got to make some really nice friends there. People were just so kind. The children were just so wonderful and so happy to be living in this community, this Christian community where they could get fed 3 times a day. They got to go to school. They, of course, get a safe place to sleep, and they get to play and have fun like children do in this country. Whereas before, they maybe were begging on the streets or helping somebody pick rice in the field.
Is English primary language or secondary language?
Secondary language. Primary language is Telugu. It's actually its own language. And I picked up a little bit of it, but not very much. So the pastor knows English very well. He was my translator the whole time. The pastor has 3 degrees. Of course, they're not anywhere near the quality our degrees are. But he has a Bible, general theology degree is what they call it. He got through a Bible college. And as well, he has a bachelor's degree in English literature. So he's very good at English. And he just finished a degree in law. He says the degree in law is very helpful because he's able to go to the judges in the courtrooms. He's able to represent then the poor Christian people that he works with, the low castes. I mean, he basically works with the low caste and outcast people. Are you familiar with the caste system at all?
There's a caste system. I'm sure we don't know all the details.
Yeah, it's a very unjust social structure. You're born in your caste and you can't get out of it. They say the only way to get out of it really is if you stop becoming a Hindu. Even then, though, you're treated like an outcast because you're not Hindu then. The community is a very close-knit, very, very cooperative community. All the Christians are basically in that area, regardless of their denominations. There are Catholics and there are lots of these just Christians. They're run by pastors that have their Bible degrees. They have to get their water by walking about half a mile, and these brass pots. Brass is very common in India, very common commodity. Here's a lady preparing food for the children, peeling some vegetables. They are cooking rice. All their meals consist of rice, and it's boiled, and then curries usually, mixed with vegetables, sometimes eggs, fish, and maybe meat on special days. This is how they eat. They sit on the floor, cross-legged. They use their right hand to eat with. They never use their left hand. The left hand in India is used for hygiene because there's no toilet paper in India. So it's too much of a luxury. Of course, look at all the rice they have. Lots of rice. They just love it. 3 meals a day.
They don't have utensils. They don't have forks.
That's right. They are eating Eastern style, which is with their hand. They did have some utensils that I was able to use, but it's very much a cultural thing, utensils. Mm-hmm. At the same time, of course, it's a hygiene problem. there because of their cultural way of eating, a lot of people get sick. They have no furniture because when the floods come, all the furniture would be ruined or float away. So they get used to sleeping and eating and sleeping on the floor.
When the floods come, you know, when somebody's basement floods, it's all muddy and messy and they've got to disinfect it and all of this sort of thing. Do they have to do this?
Oh, yeah.
They have to scrub it all down and clean it all out.
They clean it and I've seen pictures in the newspapers of the floods, and it's a very unsightly thing. There's carcasses floating all over of animals and people. And the snakes, of course, cobra snakes swimming all over. So yeah, they really have to, it's a very harsh country. They really have to be careful in all that they do. This is how they do laundry. I took a picture of this boy doing my laundry. I tried to do my own laundry and they wouldn't let me. I tried to cook and they wouldn't let me. You know, I was sort of like a guest. But they soak it in soapy water and they just hit it against a rock. That agitates it, of course. This is how some of the boys were taking their naps. I took a photo of them. On their straw mats. And they have little lockers where they can put their little valuables. And very cramped. They get used to sleeping like that very easily because India is a very cramped country. Many people in India. It's the second most populous nation in the world after China. But they're predicting that it will pass China by the year 2000. That was one reason why the pastor wanted to build a larger building, a larger orphanage, because of the need of the children, so many children wanting to be part of the orphanage, but just not enough room. When the pastor does find a child, he gives them clean clothes. If they're girls, he usually will cut their hair short to keep out insects, lice, and so forth. This is one of the girls at the orphanage. They get something to wear on their feet as well, although they don't always like to wear them. They like to go barefoot a lot of time. This is what the boys wear, very similar. This is what they wear to school. They have play clothes that they wear, but when they go to school, they need to have all kind of matching uniforms. That's the way it is throughout all of India, basically. There are no schools that are totally supported by the government of India. Well, there are a few, but they're in the big cities. So most of the schools are run by privately run by Catholic nuns or whatever. But to go to these schools, you have to have your uniform, your slate, your chalk, your books. You have to buy all your own equipment. Of course, low caste and outcast children cannot afford these things. So they cannot get educated to read and write, and so they cannot get jobs because they can't read and write to fill out an application form. So it's a cycle. And the pastor strongly believes in breaking that cycle. So he's doing that by creating his own elementary school as well as an orphanage. And here the children are going off to the elementary school down the road. And the orphanage, the sponsors, like I sponsor my child, and that pays for $15 a month, pays for his uniform, his slate, his books, food, of course, expenses to live at the orphanage and so forth.
Good bargain.
Yeah, I think so. $15, well actually it's $20 a month now. I decided to start giving $20 a month. But this is the school, and there was the school hut had fallen in the last cyclone, and luckily there was no children in it. Nobody was hurt. It was during off school hours. But they had erected a large thatched hut in the meantime. And this was like their 4th of July when I was there. And I was their guest of honor. So they have an Indian flag on a pole and there's a bunch of candy in it. So I unfurled the flag and the candy dropped. And you could see all the children waiting there for it. So that was kind of fun. That was the day that the British gave India to the Indian people. That was it. It's called the Republic Day. There's a lot of still customs that are British, I found. A lot of tea, of course. Everybody likes to take their tea with sugar and milk, like the British do. And some of the English that they use in India is British English. You know, so for instead of flashlight, they say torch. You know, things like this. The children have a time where they can play. They have play clothes and they can just get out. And they have some a little rope swing that they can get on. And they had a soccer ball they could kick around. At night, they try to memorize their homework and their Bible verses. And they sing and they pray. Have sort of like a little mini Vesper service each night. And here they are trying to memorize their Bible verses, and I took a picture of them at night with a flash. And these boys here were the first ones that Pastor Babu started the orphanage with. These were beggar children, or outcast children. He started with boys, but now it's mixed, half boys, half girls. And this is where they are now. The one in the middle has gone on to Bible college and is a pastor now, starting his own church. The one second from the left, all in white, he went to college, went to the university. He got his degree in commerce, industry and commerce, and is now working for the Indian government. And he is filling one of the set-aside quotas that Indian government has for low-caste, outcast, and non-Hindu people. There's a quota because otherwise the whole government, Indian government would be Hindu. And so he's one of the few. And you probably may have read about all the violence that was going on when they were trying to raise the quota about low-caste people to like 15% or 20% or something. And a lot of people were setting themselves on fire in India because of that. A lot of high-caste people. Anyway, that was so important to me to be able to understand how these lives have been changed and how they've become a part of their society.
Now, do most of those children go on to school, or do they get placed in other homes? Or I mean, we see five.
Right. Those two decided to go on to study further because they had the the brains to do that. The other three, as far as I know, did not. They go on either to get other jobs, doing other things. The one on the far left, I think, is in construction, building homes.
But do the children stay in the orphanage till they reach adult age? Or?
Yeah, usually they stay in the orphanage until they decide they want to leave. They're old enough to get a job outside the orphanage. Or if they get married and start their own family, or if a relative, some of them still have a relative still living, one mother or one father or stepmother, stepfather, and uncle, who knows, the grandfather, that will come and ask that the child work with them in the rice fields and live with them. Now the child is.
Did you say when he started? How long ago?
72, I think, is when they start. I think that's right. Yeah, that's right, about 72, I think.
Yeah. So is it pretty much a coming and going community, or was it pretty stable while you were there?
Children? Both. The children that live there at the orphanage are set there, as well as the pastor's family, and as well as the other adults that help take care of children. Two cooks and the older men that help children bathe and get clothed and clean their areas. Now there are about 100 children living at the orphanage. It's more than doubled since I came back. And so I know that there are more people there, but at the same time, there are people come in transition. Pastors come through and spend a night and then move on. People come through, friends of relatives of friends. So it's kind of an open door policy. And they're always very hospitable and open, very hospitable to the stranger. the children are now growing, a lot of them are growing up and looking for work in the area. And that's the picture that the pastor sent me. And I just like it, I don't know why. He's tying a knot on a little rope necklace around her neck. So they're tying a knot.
What age do they marry?
It's pretty young compared to this country, of course. They're usually when a girl starts maturing physically, they'll try to get her married. So it could be 16, could be 18, unless they decide they want to go to college. If a girl wants to go to college or university, they usually won't let her marry until after she finishes her studies. Mainly because after marriage, there's usually children. Mm-hmm. And then so forth. They still use matchmaking in India a lot. They're part of the culture is they have matchmakers, village matchmakers. Mm-hmm. Pastor Babu is a matchmaker a lot of times for the Christian community. And he jokes about it. He goes, people tell me I'm a very good matchmaker. You know, they always come to me and ask me, you know, do you think these two people would be good together? And he goes, I'm very good at bringing families together and talking about it. And he goes, you know, I like matching up couples that like love each other very much. You know, enjoy doing that. This is the pastor's wife, and she when I arrived, she put a lei of flowers around my neck as a sign of hospitality. Eastern style hospitality cannot be beat. There's just nothing like it in the world. They just amaze me how much servants they are. And the pastor and his wife moved out of their bedroom, out of their cot, and they let me sleep on it. Mm-hmm. And they slept out in the living room. I mean, I just go there and you just have to empty yourself of any pride and any, you know, you just have to humble yourself because they really are servants. They love, enjoy doing it. I was able to buy some blankets for some of the children and some books and slates and some other things some of them needed. That was my gift to some of them. I also tried to teach them some basic first aid. They had a lot of cuts on their feet and so forth, so I tried to teach them how to bandage and clean their cuts, and it was pretty fun. I couldn't speak to them because I didn't know their language, and they didn't know English well enough to speak to me. So a lot of this time, physical type of interaction, I really enjoyed. This is a picture of a girl at the school I took a picture of. I just throw this picture in here because to show you what a lot of children look like before they are become part of the orphanage. A lot of my slides show happy, smiling children. And this is, of course, the other side. That's the before picture, I guess, if you want to call it. This is the small church the pastor has, and they have a small neon cross in the back. Except they have blackouts in India about as often as Holden does in the winter, almost every day. So this was one of the times it was able to light up. And so we quickly took a picture, and the man that took the picture didn't have the camera level. So it looks like it's built on a hill, but it's not. You can't really make out our faces either. But I went to India not knowing why I was going there at first. I just knew that I was going to this Christian community, and I didn't know. So when I filled out my visa application, I didn't put down missionary. I put down tourist, because that's what I thought I would be. It's a good thing I did, because if I put down missionary, they would not have accepted my visa. India is pretty much closed to outside missionaries. The doors are closed. And but when I did get to India, I found out that the pastor wanted to take me to some villages, some of the outcast and low-caste villages, to share some of, you know, just share some and do some speaking and so forth. So I went to these villages on the motorcycle the pastor has. He doesn't have a car. It's too expensive. He has a little small little motorcycle. And we went to these villages way out in the middle of nowhere at night. 3-4 hours, you know, people would just be sitting on the ground, and they'd be singing and praying, and then they'd have the pastor would get up and preach for maybe 15-20 minutes, and then they'd sit down, they'd sing some more, and then it'd be my time to go up, and I'd get up and I would speak usually told stories. I didn't want to get too theological with them because I knew most of the people were farmers or fishing people. So I tried to speak in parables or stories that I had heard. And it seemed to work pretty well. The pastor would translate from English to their language. And it was very amazing. After each prayer meeting each night, all the people that were still there by that time would stand up and come towards me and ask me to pray for them. And they'd ask me to lay my hands on them and pray for them, so I'd do that. And their faith is just so strong there. It really is. Of course, they don't have a lot of money, so they have a lot of... they can't afford a lot of medical care. And so a lot of Christians, even non-Christians, want to believe that the prayers can heal. And I think because of their faith, it does happen. Mm-hmm. Because of their faith, because of God's love. I think those two combined. Two stories about that. Is it cold in here, or is it just me?
It's a little cool, but that's all right.
Okay.
Hold on.
I'm going to put a sweater on real quick. You don't mind?
No, go ahead.
I have a sweater. Would you like to wear it?
No, that's fine.
Okay. I'm going to put it on.
Thank you for offering.
Sure. This one man came up to me to ask a prayer for his leg. It had been hurt in his fishing boat when he fell down one day. And that was about a month ago. So he came up and I prayed for him and went home that night. The next day he came to us and he told us this story. He said that he went home, went to lay in bed, and he woke up in the middle of the night. He felt like someone was tugging on his leg. He looked down his leg and there's no one there. So he laid down and went back to sleep again. Woke up in the middle of the night again. Someone was tugging on his leg. So he looked down. There was no one there. Laid down a third time. Went to sleep. Okay. The morning sun comes through the window of his hut. And he feels something around his leg sort of tingling. He looks down. And in the cut where his leg was, there was about a 2-inch cut in his leg. It wouldn't heal for about a month. That's what his problem was. He looks down at this cut, and laying beside, not out of the cut or halfway out or in the cut, but right beside his bed, his cot, there is a 4-inch long piece of wood, splinter. 4 inches long, about 1/2 inch diameter. And he totally believes that an angel came in the night and took that splinter out of his leg. And he asked then to be baptized. He wanted to be Christian because he was Hindu. He wanted me to be part of it. So the pastor and myself in this muddy, kind of pond in outside this village with water buffalo in the pond washing themselves, we baptized this man. And when you're baptized in India, you get your name changed, because most people are named, have Hindu names. Mm-hmm. So the name that was given was Matthew. So his name's Matthew now. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing.
It's a powerful experience for you.
Yeah, it was. There were 4 other baptisms that I was a part of. And there were 2 namings of babe infants women. During the prayer, after the prayer meetings, a woman would come up, 2 women, separate instances, came up with their little infant and said, and asked the pastor, through the pastor, and said, ask me to name their baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was going, wow. Oh my gosh.
You would come up with the name?
Yes. And the way I did it was I just very quickly would close my eyes, or sometimes I wouldn't even close my eyes. I would just say a quick prayer saying, God, what's the name of this baby to be? And first name that popped into my head would be the name of the baby. Of course, culturally, though, I had to remember culturally that all the Christian names come from the Bible in India. And so they all wanted Christian names. So for the babies, one was Simon, and I can't remember the other one. That's awful, I know. But the other people we baptized was Ruth, John, Isaiah, Sarah, And when they meet me, they can't pronounce my name, Brent. How do you say that? Is that in the Bible? You know, you're a Christian? Right, okay. So yeah, in India, your religion, like I said, is very out front because it's how your name is tied in with your religion. So anyway, that's one story. Keep going. This was the boy that I sponsored. His name is Srinu. And I got to meet him and talk with him. That was really special for me.
And for him also.
Yes, and for him. This is an example of the names from the Bible that I just talked about. These are two young men that I had met. They weren't living at the orphanage, but I met them, and we became good buddies. And the guy on the left, his name is Gideon. And the guy on the right, his name is Moses.
How did they like your Mickey Mouse shirt?
They loved it. Some of them, most of them didn't know what it was, of course. Which, and it's kind of surprising. I thought, well, you know, Disney World, Walt Disney, Mickey Mouse would be in, all over. But a few of them knew. A few people that were familiar. I just took this picture of this boy doing my socks because I just liked it. I liked it. So there I am with all the children that were living there at that time. Very happy children. Very smiling all the time. Just loving. And the comparison between these children and the children I saw out in the villages was just 180 degree difference. You know? Most children, of course. Well, this is
did
what...
Did they make an impact on the village? The other people in the village see these kids?
Yes. They do, every Christmas, they go out and do a Christmas pageant out in the city square. They sing Christian songs and so forth. And the village loves it. And our people that become interested in them in the orphanage. These children here, I was just talking about kind of the other side of the coin. These children here are children that live in the area with maybe an aunt, an uncle, or maybe both their parents. Most of them are Hindu. Some are Muslim. They're children that come to the school, just to the school. They don't live in the orphanage. The pastor educates them in the school, even though they aren't part of the orphanage, even though they aren't Christian. He'll educate them. Part of the education, though, he does do a little bit of Bible study in his school. And so these children are learning to become a little bit more familiar with Christianity as they are young, which I think is wonderful. And of course, just the idea that he's helping them to learn to read and write so they can grow up and get jobs, whereas before they couldn't afford to go to school. So yeah, it's a very much an outreach as well, outreach into the local community. He goes to the villages and he distributes rice and blankets, medicine to villages. Mostly these outcast and low caste villages. So actually a whole village can be helped rather than just these certain children. There's a doctor that donates his time to the orphanage. He really believes in the work that's being done there. So he donates his time and then sponsors, like my money, part of my money went to my boy for his vitamins, to pay for his vitamins. And these are some of the pastors I was talking about that come and visit and leave. It's kind of a loose fellowship. The Christians kind of all know each other in the area. And they had amazing stories to tell me, just amazing. It was just like the book of Acts, some of their stories. One man, I think it's the man here on the left. I think it was him, his wife was poisoned while he was preaching in a village. She died. Another a woman who's a preacher, her husband was stabbed while she was preaching.
Because they're
preaching Christianity in basically Hindu culture. So it's very rough. It can be dangerous to be Christian in India, especially when you're out front about it. Man on the far right, quick story about him. He this is how he became Christian. His mother-in-law became very sick from a cobra bite and was going to die. He called in a Christian preacher that was just walking by and asked him to pray over her. He did and left. That night, he had a dream. And in the dream, he dreamed that he saw his mother-in-law laying on a bed, and he saw three drops of blood drop down from heaven into her mouth. And then he woke up. The next day, he was sitting there watching her get worse and worse. She couldn't even really talk now. She was kind of unconscious. But there was a bowl of grapes near her head that someone had left. And he just reached over and grabbed a grape and kind of just see if she would eat it. He put it, you know, on her lips. And he was kind of a little bit surprised to see her that she ate it. She chewed and swallowed it. And her eyes opened. He took another grape, put it in her mouth. She chewed it. And she spoke. She said, "I want another one." Mm-hmm. So he gave her a third one, put it in her mouth. She chewed it and swallowed it. Within 20 minutes, she was up walking around. And he goes, "Oh." So he was baptized by that preacher that came and prayed over her. The next day he was baptized. In the villages, some villages are pretty small, and the community of Christian communities are very small as well. This is a church in one of the villages. Mostly women and children, which is very interesting, I think. This is what the baptisms are like. They just find the nearest water, pond, or river, or whatever. These were sent to me, by the way. Okay, this is a nice part of it. Okay, I also took my tape recorder with me to India. And so I got to, you know, tape some of the people singing and talking. So I'm going to play a tape. It's all queued up, ready to go. And what you're going to hear is you're going to hear this little girl. Her name is Rachel. She's one of Pastor Babu's daughters. And she's going to sing for you "One, Two, Buckle My Shoe" in English, which is her second language. So she has a hard time with it. "One, Two, Buckle My Shoe," "Johnny, Johnny," "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star." And then she's going to sing a Telugu Sunday school song in her language. Then you're going to hear some church songs. And I'll flick through some slides I took of the different people of India. While I was there, I took this photo of this land. The land was given to the orphanage by a rich, high-caste Hindu lady. She was walking by the church one day, of the orphanage, and heard the children singing, and she was just so moved. She became part of the community and donated the land to build a larger orphanage. And so when I came back to America in 87, I went around and, as I said, I found sponsors and told people about the plan to build a larger orphanage. It was just amazing how everything just came together. And so they started building it soon after I left, and they are just putting the finishing touches on it. It's going to have two stories. The men are standing on the second story here. There's bottom level here. They use wood poles to hold up the frame, and they use mortar and brick, and they take the wood down and you reuse it because wood is such a high commodity, such a rare commodity in India. Anyway, so they're just putting the finishing touches on the new orphanage. It'll hold 100 children. And the school will also be a part of that. And there's about 200 children in the area going to school now. And they've added 7th and 8th grade to it. And the next plan now, the pastor has always been asking, is there any way to help employ Christian adults? And I didn't have many ideas myself. I don't know that much. But a friend I met in Oregon, he was a youth director at a church, and his name is Rich Ross. And he's now in Philadelphia getting his master's in business in third world development at Eastern College. And he's working with Tony Campolo as his secretary, if you're familiar with Tony Campolo. It's supposed to be a very good program. Anyway, for one of his classes, Rich researched fish ponds in third world countries and harvesting them and making a profit from it. He's researched and wrote a project report for a class and got credit for it. And now he and I and our wives, Monica and his wife Christine, four of us will be plan to go to India in July. He's going to go there and scope out the situation and look at the plans and look at the resources. And I'm going there to take photos and get ideas for fundraising. And we're hoping that it just all falls together like everything else has.
Will you just have a leave of absence from your parish?
It's still to be considered. They didn't see any problem with me going for 2 weeks or a month, which is what I said, about 2 weeks or a month. Rich will probably stay there longer. It could either be continuing education, they said, or possibly my vacation time, or if the thing's just going well, they may just say it's part of my ministry to Christ's church and let me do that. Yeah. It is, yeah. It's a really neat congregation that we're going to in Minnesota. And that really helped me. And I was talking with the pastor, and he's very excited about getting other people in the church involved with this project. So, yeah, I'm very, very thankful that all this has happened. And I feel like it's my other family over in India. And I'm very excited about being able to go back and see them. And, of course, you know, working on fish ponds and all that stuff. So, if there's any more questions,
well, we certainly want to thank you for sharing.
You bet.
That was
great
too.
Been more here. We enjoyed it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I feel for all the people that weren't here that can hear
us.
Are there
any
more questions?
The one slide, you said they were on the grave and you were right on the ocean.
Near the ocean, yeah. You can see the ocean in the background.
Area?
What they didn't bury him in the sand. What they do is they, to keep animals out, what they have to do is they have to build a cement structure and put the body in it, seal it off. Because otherwise, you know, jackals and snakes and everything else, all sorts of things will get in there and carry it off.
Snakes are a big problem?
They're just part of living there. That's how they look at it. It's like flies here, probably, you know? I mean, we'd go walking to some villages at night, and they say, okay, you know, be careful if you see something that looks like a stick. It might be a snake. Okay. So, yeah, I walk very slow. I have my flashlight. I was shining at everything. And
now, you said it was a small town, but the population was 100,000.
100,000.
And the pictures we saw were pretty rural-looking situations, but in a town that size, is there a metropolitan skyscraper?
Yes, there is. Well, there's no skyscrapers. I didn't get any photos of the downtown. I just didn't feel good about taking photos of the downtown for some reason or other. Mm-hmm. Probably because we didn't go there very often. But there was an area that was very congested. There was nothing over two stories high. There were some buildings that were two stories high, though. And, you know, there was a market there where you could buy your fruit and your food, buy crabs and live shrimp and fish still flopping, you know, and yeah,
but
so there was
not a business center like Calcutta or
no comparison. I think Madras is like 3 million people, Calcutta is I think 4 million, this is just 100,000, so.
Are the largest cities westernized?
The bigger ones are becoming more westernized gradually, more and more. In Madras, I went into the Northwest Airlines office, and it's like I just walked into America. There was a, it was just so anti-Indian. It was a Indo-Arabic carpet, and there was little paintings on the wall, very white, very clean. You know, it just looked like I walked right into a different country. I walked through that front door, and then there was a little computer terminal, you know, one of the old types, you know, that still make a lot of noise, like a typewriter going real fast, one of those old teletype type things. And it's a couple desks, you know, and the women there wearing saris. But yeah, it was kind of strange. You know, all of India, that was the only place where I went in where it looked westernized. But I have seen photos of well, they're giving me more and more cars, more and more motorcycles, more and more computers, more televisions. You know, it is becoming more westernized.